Is this okay to walk behind you?
Morning, everyone. This is the Conference Committee on the Omnibus Data Practices Bill. We'll come to order. Thank you all for being here bright and early on a Monday morning. We are making copies, more copies of the side-by-side, so we'll pass those out shortly. I think we'll just go around the room and make introductions, and then the plan is to go through the side-by-side. I know there's a lot in this bill that is very similar and shouldn't be controversial. I know there are people that want to testify, and there's other parts that are a little more, will probably require a little more discussion. So, my name is Carrie Dietzick. I am a senator from Northeast and Southeast Minneapolis. We'll start over there and just walk around the room with you and just do introductions.
My name is Kate Weeks. I'm with DFL Caucus Research with the House.
I'm Charlotte Anton. I'm Community Administrator.
Matt Garen from Nonpartisan House Research.
Steve Simon, State Representative, St. Louis Park and Hopkins.
And Kathy Pontius, Senate Counsel.
Ron Latt, State Senator, St. Louis Park, Hopkins, Golden Valley, Plymouth, Medicine Lake.
Oh, I can beat you. I'm Julie Rosa, Senator from Southern Minnesota, about seven counties down there.
And
then
we have
Linnea
Michelson,
Republican
Research. And Matthew Paris, Legislative Assistant to Senator Dietzick.
Peggy Scott, State
Representative. Yep. All right. And then Cheryl, Senator Lass's assistant, will also probably be joining us at some point. So now I'll ask Ms. Carmias to kind of do a walkthrough.
Okay, Madam Chair, members, you should have two documents. There's one that's the side-by-side of the language of the bill, which is what I'll be working off of. And then you also have a summary, kind of a comparison summary of the differences between the two bills, which you can file as well. And that's something that Mr. Garen and I put together just to highlight what was just grammatical or stylistic versus what was more substantive difference.
While we're getting copies, I can kind of go over some, as I said, we have some stuff that will probably be not take a lot of discussion. We also have an amendment coming from the Department of Revenue. This was data that was contained in the Senate tax bill that we passed. Some of you got a copy. And that was the House tax bill cannot contain data practices information, and so that was put in a separate bill that was it's still sitting over in committee, but since the Senate passed it, we're going to ask to review that to see if there are any objections to that. Mostly it is regarding classification of information. If you file for homestead application, you may include in that application Social Security number and some tax information, and so it is just asking that that be classified as private data. We do have the Department of Revenue here. The revisor's office had the copies of the amendment Saturday, and I know they were done with it, but they did not make it to my office, so we're calling down asking for that. So that is the other information. So we're waiting for copies. Any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just so you know the status of the bill, it's true that this was material that the Department of Revenue wanted. It doesn't seem particularly controversial. I think most of us would agree that if someone is providing information to the Department of Revenue, as you described, that we want that to be private data. And Representative Lincheski, the tax chair in the House, decided to float that as a separate bill because she didn't want the entire tax bill to have to go to the Data Practices Subcommittee. That bill is currently currently resides in Representative Lesch's Civil Law Committee. I showed the bill to Representative Lesch, explained the situation to him, and he was going to take a look at it. His first reaction, at least my impression of his first reaction, is that there was no problem with him. He can speak for himself. He's not here yet. I'm sure he will be. But at least it seemed as if that was not going to be a problem. But I think he's kind of the final say on that.
We have Cheryl has joined us. Thank you. Nope, that's okay. It's bright early in the morning. We're waiting for two more copies of the side by side. For whatever reason, didn't make it to file. Sorry.
We got it.
Start. Okay. I'm working off of R1, and this is the bill that deals with the personal contact online information. And I know Senator Scalzi was the Senate author. I'm not sure who had it in the House. And there's just a couple of differences that are more style or just different ways of getting to the same place. If you, the first deals with the Tennyson warning, which is the warning that individuals are given when private data is collected from them. And if you look on the Senate side, starting on 1.29, it just says that the warning does not apply to the data that are classified under this section. Whereas if you look up on the top in the House language on 1.21 and 1.22, it says notwithstanding that section that the data are private. So this was just a drafting decision made on the Senate side that was better to explicitly state that it doesn't apply rather than just kind of the notwithstanding language. And then the substantive difference starts on the Senate side if you look at 1.30 to 2.2. The Senate has exemptions for the data submitted to the Campaign Finance Board. And then data submitted for purposes of making a public comment or to a state agency's rulemaking email list. And these were Senate amendments that aren't in the House. And then the last difference is on the Senate on 2.3 and 2.4. And again, this is an issue that's kind of tied into the Tennyson warning. Right now under the law, there's a general rule that a government entity can't use private data for purposes that was not stated to the individual when they got the Tennyson warning. Now you end up with somewhat of a anomaly in these cases because they don't get the warning to begin with. So in Senate Judiciary, there was a discussion about, well, if this, these emails are collected, could they be used by the government entity for other purposes? I think that was an issue of Senator Sharon's in particular. So the Senate added that paragraph C on 2.3 stating that it may only be used for the purpose for which the individual provided it.
Any questions?
Okay. And then the second difference, if you look at the bottom of R1, the Senate just uses the term email or other digital addresses. The Senate has a longer, the House on 2.12 and 2.13 has a longer list there. The other digital addresses was intended to sort of capture the other types of things that are somewhat analogous to email without actually listing all this in the bill itself. So it wasn't intended to be a substitute. Okay. So the next one then, we go to R4. And this is the section that's intended to make more individuals subject to the law when there's like a settlement agreement or a buyout. And the language is almost identical between the two bills. The substantive difference, if you look on R4 on the Senate side in 5.11 and 5.12, for the athletic directors who are now in this definition of public official, it would be those who at least 50% of their time is spent in administration and these other specified duties. And I think that might have been a committee amendment in the Senate.
That was, thank you, Ms. Pontius, that was, I carried the bill in the Senate. I believe Representative Myra carried it in the House, and she made a lot of changes, and this was a lot of discussion with League of Cities, the Association of Minnesota Counties, School Board Association, the Newspaper Association, a whole group of entities, and then the Board of Education and admin came in at the last minute and also requested this addition, and so that's why Representative Myra took it over in the House first. There was a lot of continuing negotiations and changes, and the Board of Education and admin came and requested that, and so we made those changes in the Senate.
Does any of this language reflect a consensus then among all the different parties that were interested?
Yes.
The last stop in the process?
Yeah, all of the language was an ongoing negotiations from the language that Representative Myra adopted, and then they continued discussing and continued the negotiations, and that's where we got the language additions in 5.11 and 5.12. Uh-huh. So it was a continued negotiation to try to get the best.
So the idea here is that the Senate, the final language that everyone seemed to agree on is contained in the Senate side?
Correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I spoke on Friday with Representative Myra, and she acknowledged and was okay with the Senate language. I know I'm not going to make a motion at this point, but she told me she was fine, that that was the later in time kind of consensus, and she had no problem with it.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, the next go to R5. Harrison, and you'll see the section 5 on the Senate side, and this actually ties into a later section in the bill. This was from a bill of Senator Senjum's that was a committee amendment on the Senate side, and this involves, I think, a case that rose up in his district where there was a child with special needs who there had been an incident at school involving the child, and the parents didn't find out about it until much after the fact. And one of the reasons given was that the school was concerned that they might be violating the personnel data statute if they gave information to the parents. So what his bill does, the two provisions in here, this part actually amends the personnel data statute. And if you look at on the Senate side on 5.33 and 5.34, it provides that the data may be released for purposes of giving information to the parents, and then that sort of the substantive part appears later in the bill. And that's in section 35 in the Senate side. So those issues are kind of tied together.
And this was a case where it was an autistic child who was nonverbal. He came home with bruises, came home from school with multiple bruises, and the parent called the school to find out what happened because the kid was, you know, bruised, and they were nervous and couldn't even acknowledge that something had happened. And so the intent of this bill is to allow the school to acknowledge something happened and acknowledge that they are looking into it without getting in trouble. And then and later, like just, Ms. Pining said, the substance is more later on. But it was basically to allow the school to acknowledge something happened, because otherwise, I mean, and you can imagine this parent is frustrated because the child can't verbally explain to the mom what happened. So that's where this language came from. And this was an amendment in the Senate when we adopted the omnibus bill. So, thank you.
On R5, then, the other difference, if you look at Senate Section 6 and House Section 5, there's just some technical and stylistic differences between the language. On the Senate side, there was a technical amendment in committee that just tightened up the federal code definite or reference. Actually should refer to a series of sections rather than just one. And there's like the plural versus singular use of a noun. So they're pretty minor differences. Identical language, and if you get to R7, this is really a minor difference. On the Senate side, if you look at 8.5 and 8.12, it refers to the data becomes public, where the House says the data become public. So it's a grammatical difference.
Sorry, Kathy, what?
R7, if you look at 8.5 on the Senate side versus 7.24 on the House side, the Senate has become public and the House has become public.
I insist on the Senate position.
And then the same thing is also on the Senate 8.12 and the House 7.31. And then if you go to R8, this is the Metropolitan Council the transit card data. And again, there are some stylistic differences between the language. If you look at the Senate on 8.21, kind of at the top of R8, the Senate says, which includes, the House on 8.5 says, comma, which include. And then also the Senate uses the shorthand term council to refer to the Metropolitan Council, where the House actually keeps restating that it is the Metropolitan Council. And then the substantive difference, if you look on the House side, on the bottom of R8, on 8.34 and 8.35, it does allow the car data to be submitted to the Metropolitan Transit Police and other law enforcement agencies. That's not in the Senate language. And then if you get to R9, everything there is identical in the language. This is the Department of Health Treatment of Biological Specimens. And the next difference then is all the way in R14. And this is in the newborn hearing screening law. And I think this is Senator Benson's bill. Senate side, and I believe the report was an amendment in committee. So if you see on R14, on 1411 to 1414, it requires a report biannually on the data privacy of activities of this advisory screening committee. And then the other difference is on is the effective date that's on 14.16 on the Senate side. Because without an effective date, it would be August 1st, so technically there'd be a month when this advisory screening committee wasn't authorized by law. So I think that was Senator Benson's floor amendment. Mm-hmm. And then the next difference is in R16, the Senate section 19. This was a floor amendment from Senator Westrum, and this amends the driver's license privacy statute. And if you look at 17.4 to 17.9, it's basically just a reworking of the current law under which individuals, you can like opt in to get to have your data released for business purposes such as surveys and marketing, and just rewrote the language a little bit to emphasize that the consent has to be in writing. I think it is under current law, but it's not. It just kind of cross-references in the requirement, and that the disclosure be used only for those purposes. And so that continues then on the top of R17. And then if you look at on the Senate side again on R17, section 20, this is in the beginning of some of the BCA data and Department of Corrections data, and I think this was an amendment of Senator Limmer's in Judiciary Committee. And I think this was language that it was Senate File 1002. I can't remember who that House author was.
This was a bill that Senator Saul, it was House File 1237. It was Senate File 1002, Senator Hall, and it has to do with public defenders. And right now they can get some access on the Department of Corrections website. At a certain point, if I remember this right, they have to go through the county attorneys to get the data. It's already there. It's just another step. I believe this will potentially save the Department of Corrections money, and it will save time to both the public defenders and the county attorneys because it just allows them. It allows them access, and so they can get the access. It's already in the system. It's just this makes it official that they can get it. In this section, requires an audit, and so the corrections can audit it. So, when public defenders are here, if anybody has any questions.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, I'm going to defer to Mr. Guerin with a quick spot and one other thing.
Okay. Yep.
Madam Chair, there's one section that had a difference on page R16 that Ms. Pines did mention, which is relates to the newborn screening and newborn hearing screening provisions. So, you can see the difference on the top of page R16 on the Senate side. The Senate language exempts newborn hearing screening from the genetic information provisions in section 13.386. And on the House side, the House language exempts newborn hearing screening from 144.125, which is consistent with the newborn genetic information provisions.
Thank you.
Yes. At some point, I'd like to have a clarification on those two sections. What are the specific differences? But of course, the action will be.
Sure, then the next provision that I have is on R19. And this, if you look at 20.4 versus 18.18, the Senate refers to destroy the arrested person fingerprints, and the House says the arrested person's fingerprints. next difference starts at the bottom of R19. Just, that's just the lead in, that's section 23 on the Senate side, which is forensic laboratories, and this is a bill of Senator Lance's. And it also goes on to R20, then down to 21.9. Difference is on R21, and again, this is just stylistic. This is in the BCA data. If you know it, on the Senate side in 22.18, it refers to the Bureau, where the House uses the full name of Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. And that same difference is in a few other places on R22 and R23 as well. Substantive difference on R22. If you look at the Senate side on 22.35, the last clause there in Minnesota law governing the classification of data, and also the same thing on the Senate side on 23.6. This was an amendment, I believe it was Senator Limmer's amendment, I think, on the Senate floor. That just wanted to clarify that they'd have to comply with Minnesota data practices law if the records are being released either to the federal government or another state. Then there's a few other minor grammatical differences as well. And then the next, if you go to R24, there's a few differences. Again, they're more stylistic. Like on 24.18, the Senate states that this section shall not be used in place of, and the House says the section cannot be used. And similarly, on 24.24, the Senate says shall not, the House says cannot. So they're just stylistic grammatical differences between the two bills there. Also on R25, if you go to the top, the end of the first paragraph there, again, there's some technical and stylistic differences in the language. Like instead of, the Senate says provide it to the fire chief for review, the House says provide the data to the fire chief for review. Next is on R28, and this is in the retail liquor license background checks. And again, it's just minor grammatical. 28.28 on the Senate side refers to their signed versus the House on 26.15 says the applicant signed. And then the next on R28, the Senate Section 34, and this is the bill of Senator Halls that you were discussing earlier. That's not in the House bill, dealing with the public defender access. And then on R29, House has a provision on access to data by the Domestic Fatality Review Team, which is not in the Senate bill, although I believe this is one that is actually on the Senate floor right now. Yeah, it just hasn't passed the Senate. The identical language is in a bill on the Senate floor.
This is, I believe, Senator Steuben's bill, and we did hear it in committee. We moved several of the bills individually and separately, and this is one that was moved individually. The House has it itself. And I believe it's put similar language, if not exact. So.
And then the next on R30, Senate Section 35, this is the issue from the Senator Senjum's bill that you were discussing earlier. This actually amends the Child Abuse Reporting Act. say that regardless of whether there's a report that's made under the law, that a school would have to report, give information to the parents regarding the incident that had occurred involving their child. So it kind of ties in with the personnel data statute. This amendment earlier makes it clear you can release personnel data for purposes of doing this. And then on R31, there are two newborn screening provisions that are in the Senate bill and not in the House bill. Section 36 postpones destruction of the test results. And again, this relates to the court case and the orders that are currently in place. And then Section 37 requires the Commissioner of Health to review the screening program and contains a number of factors that have to be considered, and that's not in the House bill. And on the top of R32, there's a report to the legislature that's required. And those are the differences, Madam Chair. I'll defer to Mr. Guerin in case he's spotted anything else.
I know we have some people in the public that wanted to testify, I think in general, from the Minnesota, I think it's in Koji or whatever that is, from the Zachops, if they want to just, and there's a sign-in sheet there too. When you're done, if you could sign in and just state your name for the record and welcome to the committee.
All right, thank you, Senator. Would you like to take testimony in regards to the entirety of the bill, or are you looking to go to a particular section?
If you have particular sections that you have issues with, that'd be great.
Certainly, I will call them out. Our main concern, and this has been heard both by the House and the Senate, so I won't go into detail, is over the reclassification in Section 1 of a telephone and email address, personal contact information. Since this body seems to want to go that way, to reclassify that, that information, we'll just speak to ways to narrow the scope of that that we would suggest. In general, we prefer the Senate.
I'm sorry, could you identify yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry, pardon me. Matt Ealing, volunteer board member with the Minnesota Coalition on Government Information, pardon me. So as to the language, we prefer the Senate language for the most part. We feel that gives some more doors open to additional information that can be kept public. The main problems we have with both versions are, one, the exemption from the Tennyson warning. We feel that if the legislature wishes to make telephone and email information private data, that should be treated like virtually all other private data under Minnesota law. And someone who submits that data should be notified that the government is maintaining it and collecting it, and they should be notified about the purposes to which it will be put. So we would like to see the Tennyson warning apply to this data. Secondly, we'd like to see a narrowing of the scope of the data that's being reclassified here. We would like to strike or informational and of a general nature, that language from the Senate version that's in line 1.23. So essentially that would create a reclassification of data maintained for notification purposes. So we feel that's in keeping with the spirit of the concerns that have been raised, and that would be the most narrow construction of that language. Farther on in sections 4, even though it sounds like Representative Myra has signed off on the existing language, we feel that there was some better language in her original bill, and it would be inserted in our estimation at the line 5.9. That language would be any employee that supervises or manages three or more employees, and that existed in an earlier version of this language. And that kind of gets around some of the problems that media organizations have had in trying to apply this language to individual municipalities. There is a problem with the city of Minneapolis trying to, they were able to evade the distinctions that were drawn in the current law to keep some of their personnel data from being released as public data. And then finally, in what is Section 8 of Senate language and Section 7 of the House language, regarding the mileage-based user fees. We would like to make sure that the names of participants in that road test data are public. We think that's appropriate for oversight. So those questions can be talked to by media representatives. And we know that the department has made folks' names available to the media. The Star Tribune did a story recently, but we don't feel as a it's not a good data practices management purpose or a practice to be able to go through a state agency to get names of individuals who are participating in public programs. So those would be our concerns, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Mr. Ewing, I'm not sure if I understand it. Maybe I am tracking this correctly, but you said you don't think it is a good practice to have to go through a government agency to get names, yet isn't that what exactly you're requesting in your initial request on section one for the notification?
We would say that names submitted as email information, for notification purposes to a government agency, if those are submitted by an individual, the press and the public should be able to get those names, and that's why we oppose the reclassification of that data as private data.
Okay, so Madam Chair, Mr. Ewing, so you're saying that there's no inconsistency between your positions on those two provisions, is that
okay? Correct, yeah. In Section 8, if someone has participated in this road test mileage user fee study, their name should be public. The public should know who would participate in that test. That's our position.
Any other questions? No, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Does anybody from the city or any of the cities or anything want to testify on that section? And I don't just a comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Patrick Hines with the League of Minnesota Cities. I'll just speak briefly on Section 1. I agree with the previous testifier that the Senate language would be preferable. I think it has, the Senate adopted a number of provisions requested by state agencies, the Campaign Finance Board and the Pollution Control Agency. I think those are improvements. I think paragraph C also provides some direction, some clear direction to cities that they can't share the information that they collect for other purposes, and I think that works well with the language regarding the Tennyson warning. On the Tennyson warning provision, I would note that all this information is submitted voluntarily. The government's not asking for it, and that was the reason why the Tennyson exclusion was put in, to clarify that you're voluntarily submitting this information, the Tennyson warning does not apply. And paragraph C that Senator Latz added in Judiciary Committee, I think, provides substantial protection so that the government won't share the information or use it for purposes other than for which it was requested. That's all I have.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could Mr. Ewing come back? Can I ask him a question in regard to the comments just made? Just curious on your comment regarding what he said about the Tennyson warning, and if they're voluntarily giving that information, is a Tennyson warning generally required or not?
I believe that the previous testifier is correct that if it's voluntary, you don't need to give it. We would take issue with the voluntariness, though. If you need to submit your email to participate in the snowplow notification, for instance, and that's the vehicle by which you submit that information to the government, it's not really a voluntary choice. You either have to submit your email to participate or not. And so that's the distinction we would draw there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Mr. Hines, am I going to go to a community meeting and there be a sign-up sheet that says snowplow notification list, and then underneath it in fine print, above where you sign up, says this information may be used for any lawful purpose by the city to notify a citizen, whatever. What's to stop the city from doing that?
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, I don't know that anything in this bill would prevent a city from putting, from notifying someone that that it can be used for whatever purpose if it's on that paper when you sign up. I clearly would think it is not a best practice nor a good idea for a city to purposely try to put tiny little fine print down to trick people into having their information used for something that they don't want. I don't think that's likely to happen, and I imagine if it did, I would soon be sitting in front of your committee answering a lot of pointed questions about that city for doing that. So I understand your concern. I just don't think cities are likely to do that, and certainly not something we would recommend that they do.
Madam Chair, thank you, Mr. Hines. And the reason I ask is just because I work in the city attorney's office, so I guarantee you someone will be adding that provision in just to, you know, cover your tail. Because who knows? In a city agency, they want to do something. Well, we have this list, and they don't realize the exclusion because they want to use it for some other public works purpose. Or to notify you about an assessment or something. Well, no, this is supposed to be for snowplows. And the city attorney's going to say, well, what if this department doesn't know about that? We need to put this language in just to cover it just in case. And then all of a sudden, boom, it's an unlawful purpose. So that's why I ask it. I'm sure there's no intent there. The reason we put these provisions in, hopefully they're prescriptive, is to avoid that.
Chair, I did hear on Friday from Representative Freiberg, mm-hmm. who was the House author of the equivalent of the Section 1 language, and he was generally, or I guess completely, fine personally deferring to the Senate language. He didn't think that harmed the intent of this bill. That's impressive.
Okay, so do we want to move? Sounds like to make a motion to move Section 1.
Madam Chair,
yes.
I do think that the language, the corrections that Mr. Ewing suggested on lines 1.23, and was a part of 1.24 as well, Mr. Ewing?
On the Senate side, just 1.23.
Okay. After the or, crossing out the informational purposes of general nature.
Or
informational purposes of a general nature. I think that is a good amendment and gets to the heart of the matter here and put some guardrails on.
Any comments or?
Not sure.
Yes, Senator Lacks.
It just seems to me if the goal here is to limit it only for notification, then that would accomplish it. But if you want to do anything other than notification, someone signs up for email communication of some sort, that's outside the scope of the definition of the term notification, then deleting that provision is going to put a lot of cities in violation of the law or severely restrict the ability to use the email system to communicate with their constituents, residents.
Madam Chair, but that would be making a huge, a fairly significant change in data practices law right now. And I don't know if Mr. Ewing wants to come back and address that or not, what current statute says and why it's the way that it is, but I understand what the intent of this bill is, but we can't completely throw the baby out with the bathwater on some of us either. There are reasons that it was put there.
Representative Scott, is it the general nature that's bothering you? Because the informational purposes, I tend to agree with Senator Black on that. It's the general nature that perhaps is a little too nebulous. And perhaps that could be tightened down.
Mr. Hines, did you have any comments?
Dan Patrick Hodge, the League of Minnesota Cities. I would agree with Senator Ladd that making that amendment would make it, I think, too restrictive. Just as an example, if I, as a resident of Minneapolis, requested to receive a city newsletter or a newsletter from the park board, I don't know that that constitutes a notification, but I would think that my email would deserve the same protection as an email signed up simply to be notified of a snow emergency. I think the general nature language is there to distinguish between a contact to a park director about a specific incident. For example, how come you haven't plowed the trail in the park, versus a request of a general nature which would go out to a larger audience that says the park board is, here's what the park board has been up to for the past year, this is what the city council has done. That sort of informational type of material, which I think might not be covered if it's simply with limited to notification.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, one of the things I've learned in the Mary Liz Halber School of Data Practices is if you're going to allow a set of any information, then you're supposed to be really specific with what that is. It's supposed to be a specific set. And I feel that this is getting away from that. But I see Mr. Yeeling standing by. I think we have some words to add.
Would you care for an additional comment?
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah. Representative Scott, that is our concern generally. We, as a principal matter, coalition would like to preserve public data as public unless there's a compelling reason to preserve it as private. And when there is a reason to preserve it as private, we'd like to tailor the language as narrowly as possible. So if the municipality would wish, for instance, to articulate other specific reasons, such as notification, we think that's in the spirit of specificity. It's just the generalized nature. We're afraid that once language like this gets submitted to a responsible authority at a municipality, if there's a data request that comes in, they could misconstrue the language too broadly and perhaps reclassify or keep redact data that would otherwise be public. That's our concern.
And Mr. Yeeling, could you state your name again and in the organization you're with?
Certainly. Matt Yeeling, Minnesota Coalition on Government Information.
So, Madam Chair, so Mr. Yeeling, which part of that phrase are you good with, and which part are you not?
We would be okay with notification purposes, striking out from the Senate side, or informational and of a general nature.
So you want, Madam Chair, Mr. Yeeling, you want the entire thing struck?
We'd be okay with keeping notification purposes.
Madam Chair, Mr. Yeeling, I understand that. The question was raised by Senator Rosen, whether or not the general nature provision being that alone deleted, your problem is with including or informational purposes altogether. Is that right?
Read together, informational purposes of a general nature is our problem, because we feel that language is potentially too broad and could be misconstrued.
Okay. So.
But what if Senator Latt?
Madam Chair, this exact language appears on both the House and the Senate bill.
So it did pass the
House.
Mm-hmm. Just for clarification, if the language was notification or informational purposes as requested by the information, is that to remove of a general nature?
We would still be nervous about informational alone. We would not oppose other additions, other specific additions.
Right.
Madam Chair, I think the issue there is informational purposes is also broad. And this is going away. To broaden this is to go away from what is in current statute. I understand that both bodies passed it as is. But if we're wanting to keep in the nature of Chapter 13, we're supposed to be giving just a very narrow scope here. So that's my concern. If we allow it here, we're going to have to allow it in other places, too. We do have nation-leading data practices, and I want to keep it that way.
Okay, any other comment on Representative Scott's motion? And the motion was, if I am correct, to remove for informational purposes of a general nature. Any other comments? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion fails. Any other discussion on section one? Representative Simon.
Madam Chair, I'll move on the Senate language on line 1.23 to delete the words of a general nature.
Representative Simon has a motion to remove language of a general nature on 1.23. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion passes. The next section is section two.
I don't think we formally adoption of the section one Senate language as amended. I'll make that motion.
All right, Representative Simon, thank you. Move the adoption of section one as amended. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion passes.
I have a question on section two.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that the stylistic difference that on line 2.16 of the Senate language, it just says, or other digital addresses, whereas the House listed them. I'm wondering if you could get an opinion from someone about whether the Senate language would naturally encompass what the House mentions. If it does, I don't see any reason why not to adopt the Senate language, but if the House language, if the particular definition could be read as something other than just another digital address, and I'd have some concerns, but I don't know enough to know whether that's the case.
Do you have any?
Madam Chair, Representative Simon, I'm the last person to ask the technology question, but I think the one thing that jumps out at me is the House has the GPS system locations on 2.13, which I don't think would be a digital address, but somebody who's more expert on the terminology can provide some insight.
Madam Chair, I'd also note that the House language says Internet Communication Services accounts information, which isn't really a digital address, and account information being like a login password or login username. That wouldn't necessarily be an address the way the Senate language is.
Madam Chair? I see Lord, Ms. Meyer-Kopinski is here from AGDEN. I wondered if she has an idea on how to interpret this language.
I was looking at her, too. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, I'm Lord Meyer-Kopinski, Department of Administration. And after Ms. Thompson, I'm the second least person you should have. As I think Mr. Gehring has pointed out, I think the GPS information as well as the account information goes broader than other digital addresses, at least in what a layperson would, I think, assume to mean by that. I think that if you want to cover broader information, you could certainly look at the GPS information and the other in the public language.
Madam Chair?
Yes,
sir. It seems to me if you want to specify certain kinds of things, it's okay as long as you don't have the effect of limiting the reach, if you want the reach to cover other digital addresses. So maybe the solution is on the House side, line 2.12, after email, insert or other digital. That way you've covered the email or other digital addresses, and you've included the other more specific, not sure if the really digital addresses categories as well.
Sorry, I missed that.
On line 2.12, after email, insert or other digital. And I'll make that motion.
Any other questions? If I remember correctly, this was also to include Facebook addresses, Twitter accounts. And this is dealing with crime prevention. Security information issues like crime prevention information, so this was kind of limited to signing up for your community crime prevention programs. So Senator Latz moved adding to line 2.12 to the House language after email addresses or other digital addresses. Are there any questions or comments? All in favor of the motion, say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Representative Simon.
Madam Chair, I'll remove adoption of Section 2 of the House Language Amendment.
All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Madam Chair, I think Section 3 is identical.
Yep.
So I'll move the adoption.
Okay, Representative Simon moves adoption of Section 3. Is there any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
I'll move adoption of Section 4 of the Senate language. This was the language that I mentioned. I spoke with Representative Myra on Friday, and she was fine with adoption of the Senate language. Since it was basically later in time in terms of the negotiation among the stakeholders, she had read it and she agreed to it.
Okay, Representative Simon moves adoption of the Senate language on Section 4. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Four, Senate language is adopted. I'm going to suggest that we skip Section 5 because I believe Senator Rosen had questions later on, possibly. And so if we go on
I think that was on the live chat. That was on the new one screen.
Oh, okay. Well, but you're right. So any questions on Section 5, which is relating to the Senjum Amendment? Okay. So any questions?
Madam Chair, so moved.
Senator Rosen moves Section 5.
That does mean we'll move Section 35.
Okay.
Are we adopting that language? There's no House language.
Correct. So this is also Section 5 and I believe Section...
I think it's Section 35.
35. Yes.
So Madam Chair, I move Section 5 and Section 35 of the Senate language.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Those two sections pass. Now we are on to Section 6. We have some minor differences here.
Chair, I'll move adoption of the Senate language, and I'll note as I do that I understand from the Department of Administration that the new kind of grammatical rule that they're seeking to adopt is to refer to data as plural wherever we can, and I notice in some sections House gets it right, and in some sections the Senate gets it right, but admin has gently pushed us in that direction, so consistent with that, and for other reasons, I'll move adoption of the Senate language in Section 6.
Those in favor of Representative Simon's motion?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
The only difference I see is 6.10 versus 5.3, the section numbers, Section 3001, 3001, 3007,
mm-hmm.
versus
3001. Okay. Madam, before we go on, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
The person inside of me think this is petty, but I've always understood data as a collective noun. So why is the Department of Administration deciding that?
The department wish to answer.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Levin, to make sure that it is grammatically correct and that data is a plural word.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, but grammatically correct to me, if you look up collective noun or mass noun, it is an area in dispute. If you read the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, they have articles in the same paper that use it differently right now. So it is far from agreed upon. I see data as a collective noun, and we'll use it in the singular. And so I'm not going to make a speech on the House floor about this. I want it as singular. So that's my position.
Okay. I do have a question. I do have a question on, because on line 610 on the Senate side and 530 on the House side, we have, the House has section 3002 and the Senate has 3001 to 3007, and so do we know?
Madam Chair, members, I think the Senate just, it's a series of sections that actually make up the Act. I think section 3002, as we recall, is just the definitions in the Act. So the Senate just actually refers to all the sections that make up the Act, where for some reason the House just refers to the definitions section of the Act. So that was just a technical change made in Senate Judiciary.
Any questions on that? Okay.
Madam Chair, are we still on a different matter? I was going to talk a little bit about the handout that we discussed.
I think this is from, this is later.
Oh, okay.
Yep. We're still on Section 6, Department of Administrative Changes.
Oh,
okay. Any questions on, I think we have a motion to adopt the Senate language on Section 6, page R5. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That language passes.
I think that section 7 of the Senate language on R5 and section 6 of the House language are identical, so I'll move adoption of that language. So, Madam Chair, I'll move adoption of the language in section 7 of the Senate. We adopted the Senate language, Section 5. We adopted the Senate language, Section 6. And now Representative Simon has a motion to adopt the Senate language for Section 7, which they are identical, on page R5. So all in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, Section 7. Now we are on to R6, which I believe there are some grammatical changes. And then,
yes, Madam Chair, if I might.
Yep.
I just handed out an email, I don't think it's mine,
nope.
From Mr. Rudine of MnDOT, and he's responding here to those who aren't in the House, to some concerns expressed by Representative Holbert on the House floor as to this language. And you'll see that he more or less concedes that there might be a better approach that's close to what, and maybe exactly what, Representative Holbert, at least on the House floor, was counseling us to do. But I know that Mr. Gehring has some comments on whether and to what extent this language would be workable, and I'm wondering if
okay,
we might
yep.
defer to
yep, Mr. Gehring.
So, Madam Chair, this language in the email is, I think, useful for sort of discussing the concept and having the conference committee then decide this is the direction. adopt this language, this phrase in the PS might need a little bit of certainly not something to clarify where in statute it would go, because currently it's not quoted in the section of statute. And I think the intent would be to have the conference committee not adopt either Senate Section 8 or House Section 7 and go with this instead. But I don't know if these are clear to clarify that. But so this would be a new section to that means a new section for the committee to consider.
Do you have any comments? Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Peter Zuniga. I am with MnDOT's Office of Chief Counsel. Yeah, I think in responding to Representative Fulber's concerns about this, this would be alternative language that we would feel comfortable with. You know, destroying the data may not cover the temporary classification. The only addition that I would suggest is changing the effective date. Right now, the language would require MnDOT to destroy the data by July 31st. So we would request an effective date after a final enactment. So we can have time to actually destroy the data before August 1st.
Okay, so I'm going to make a suggestion so that Senate Council can review this. If we skip over, if this is possible, if we skip over, I'm assuming, does this just deal with Section 8, or is it Section 8 and Section 9 of the Senate bill? Okay, let's have a discussion. I'm going to take Mr. Gehring's suggestion to have a discussion of whether we like this amendment, and I don't know if this email was passed out, if we have copies for the public, and I, of course, wrote on mine. But it's so I can read and work copies. So it says, after watching the House floor debate, MnDOT agrees that destroying the public data associated with the mileage-based user fee project would be a better approach than permanently classifying the data. The public summary data would continue to be available for research purposes. And then it goes on to say that we need an exemption from other laws to the contrary to make this happen. And so they have some suggested language that we'll have to work out. So if there are any questions from you guys, if you have any other comments or any questions from the public, and we'll pass that out.
So, Madam Chair, you're just suggesting that our administrative staff would just work on the language and we'll come back to it.
Yes.
Yeah. Representative Simon. As long as we're just assessing the concept,
yeah.
As long as MnDOT is fine with this and it seems to address Representative Holbert's concerns, I would endorse this approach personally. And I would leave to staff to craft the language to get us there.
I agree with you, Representative Simon. I will also, this was Senator Champion's bill, I'll also discuss with him, but I'm inclined if this is what, I believe this was a language from MnDOT, and so if that's what they suggest, I'm going to recommend that council vote on that and skip over this and come back to that at a later time. If that is agreeable, Representative Simon.
And Jeremy, one other thing on this section, I know we're not adopting the section language, but unfortunately, I think on page R7 we have a decision to make on plural
yes.
Yes. Singular, whether by coin toss or otherwise. But I noticed that online, as I think Ms. Conway said in her walkthrough initially, on page R7, Senate line 8.5, House line 7.24, and then again on 8.12 in the Senate 7.31, it becomes versus become. And this is an example where, at least according to the the style manual at the Department of Administration, this is an example where the House got it right. Last time it was the opposite. So I guess, meaning nothing personal towards Representative Lesch, I would move adoption of the House language as to those two terms.
Madam Chair.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah.
So before we go this route and allow the staff grammarian to dictate what is proper, wasn't Buyer Krupinski, yours, who's the staff grammarian that decided that this is correct now? Are they here in the room?
I think he's having flashbacks.
It was my college days that I did all this stuff. Okay.
Yes, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please.
Thank you. I'm Stacey Christensen. I'm the administrator of the Information Policy Analysis Division. And yes, Representative Lesh, I tend to agree with the using data as not a collective noun, but data being the singular and data the plural.
Oh, it's from, thank you, Madam Chair. It's from what? Okay. Well, now that she's on the spot, and I'm really with my aim here, Madam Chair, to put her on the spot. So, we just have a disagreement.
Okay. Any other comments?
Yeah. Madam Chair, I'll just move adoption of the House terms on page R7, line 7.
House section.
Oh, the whole House section.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll move adoption of House section 8.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Can we get some staff to review the Lesh anthology of poems to see if he uses the term data consistently?
Madam Chair, there's no need to review. I can assure the senator that they're all completely correct.
So we adopted the House language for Section 7 and Section 8. So until Section 7, we are still waiting to staff will form that language. So now we are on to Section 9 of the House and Section 10 of the Senate.
There are stylistic differences that start with on page.
And there are stylistic differences again. We have some grammatical ones, and then we also have the Met Council versus just the Council. Any discussion on that?
Mr. Gehring informs me that there is also the substantive difference on the bottom of our eight.
Yes. Right. Yep. I'm starting with these ones. Possibly. The grammatical differences on 821 in the Senate and 825 in the House. This is the singular versus plural again.
Can we just have an explanation? With 8.32 to 8.35, basically, where it came from and what it purpose.
The House difference?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember? I think they were just changed from committee.
Oh, yeah. Madam Chair, yeah, the House added the Metropolitan Transit Police, which I don't think that discussion came up in the Senate side.
Madam Chair, so this is a perhaps an important deal, and this is an authorized amendment to change, to add to the list of authorized dissemination data to Metropolitan Transit Police and other law enforcement agencies.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Judd Shetton. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Met Council. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. We have this discussion related to the Metro Transit being able to have access to this information, and we have since found that to be redundant. So the Transit Police would already have access to this, so we are perfectly fine with the Senate language. If you'd like to move the House language, that works just as well, but we believe that we already have that ability to use that information. So either way is perfectly fine with us.
Do we know if other law enforcement agencies also have access to that data for investigative purposes?
Madam Chair, Senator Latz, yes, we spoke with former Senator John Harrington, who's our Metro Transit Police Chief, and he feels that they are covered as well, that they would have that access as well.
Any questions?
And let's eliminate the redundant language.
All right.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Latz.
If that's the only substantive difference,
yeah.
Then I guess we'll just have the grammatical changes.
Ms. Pontius, is it, and I know we get this later on when we have the Bureau versus the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, is there a preference from council to met council?
Madam Chair, I don't remember the discussion coming up in the Senate. I don't know if this was something the House made a change. It's in a chapter of law where Metropolitan Council isn't defined, but it's just a style preference. I guess sometimes when a term's used once or a number of times in a section, the first time we'll use the whole term, and then after that you just use the shorthand term.
Okay.
I have no preference at all. I simply note again, the plural singular arises on 8.21 and 8.5 on the House side. So, but otherwise, the mentioning of agencies, I just don't have an opinion one way or another.
Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, only that plural singular, the term data is not used in that paragraph. It's system. So I think system, I guess we'll ask Representative Lesh, I interpret that as singular.
I do as well, Senator Lesh.
Which means then the Senate use of the term includes would be correct. Right. Are we together on that, Representative Lesh?
We're on the same
page. All right. So, Senator Lesh moves the Senate language in section
8.21.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And then just the vote. Okay. Senator Latz has to go to finance. So any further discussion on it is the Senate Section 10, House Section 9 regarding transit customer data. No, this is Senator Rosen will move the Senate language in Section 9. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Penny?
10.
Senate Section 10?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Ron. I'm flipping pages here, so that's... All right, Section 11, House Section 10. This is from... Yes, it's identical, and it's the non-controversial part of the Marty and Representative Tom bill. Any discussion on that section? And I believe this is all of our 9, our 10, and our 11. Any discussion on that? I believe they are identical, so Senator Rosen will move the Senate language in Section 11. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. R12, Section 11 in the House bill, and Section 12 in the Senate. These are identical up to page R14, I believe. They're potentially different.
Madam Chair, Section 12.
unless the other House counselors have an objection. The Senate language in the next section, which is Senate Section 13, is the same, except at the very end, the top of R14 is the study. I don't see any harm in the study, or not the study, it's a report, I should say. And I think a report like that would be useful and give comfort to some members in the House, I would think. So,
Madam Chair,
Senator Blash.
Britton Kahn would register strong objection to the report in that she sees there as being absolutely no problem with ranking minority members and chairs looking up on the internet to find out. But for the record, I also categorically disagree with Representative Kahn, so I'm going to agree with her on this one.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Is there a difference, though, in the effective date?
They're the same. They're different. They're not possible.
Yeah, they're both.
The Senate's got the effective date.
Yes.
The Senate has the effective date of July 1st.
Yes.
It's a month difference.
So the Senate language would come into effect a month earlier. So any discussion on the Senate language? This is section.
Senate Section 13.
Senate Section 13. All in favor of adopting Senate Section 13, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. I believe the Senate Section 14 and the House Section 13 are identical.
Madam Chair, I assume Section 14 and the Senate language.
Senator Rosen moves the Section 14 of the Senate language. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Section 15.
Identical.
Are identical. And actually, yep, so Senator Rosen moves us to Section 15 of the Senate language. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Section 16 appears to be identical.
Madam Chair, so moved.
Senator Rosen moves adoption of Senate language Section 16. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
A lot of difference here.
Section 17. Okay, this one I think we're going to skip because this one, this is where Senator Rosen asked the difference between. So on the top of page R16, the data collected in the Senate language is reserved to Chapter 13 and the House language, Section 144. So we're going to skip that right now so that staff can give us some information on what that is, if that is okay with everybody. This is data collected where we the House and the Senate refer to different sections, and so we're going to get that information from staff. Section 18 of the House and Section 17 of the Section 17 of the House and Section 18 of the Senate also appear to be identical. So Senator Rosen moves Senate language in Section 18. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Adopted? All right, Section 19 of the Senate is new language. This was the Senator Westrum amendment that just clarifies specifically if you are, when you get your driver's license, if you want any of that information disclosed, it is only if the applicant consents in writing. Any questions on this section?
No.
Is anybody from the department here that wants to public safety that has any concerns? Do you have any concerns? Yep. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Jared Joinoff from the Department of Public Safety. I'm afraid it's been a bit since I've reviewed this, but we were initially rather concerned about it. The department does, various stakeholders of the department do do purchase this data, and it is commonly sold, and it is there's a tie-in with the DPPA federal law, and I'm afraid I'm not overly conversant with that, but it is of some concern, yes.
I think it's good, Madam Chair. I think it's good language, and I think giving the person getting the driver's license knowledge, whether they want to have their information sold. I think that's a good.
So, Mr. Joro, how much money do you make on this year?
I believe the department realizes $300,000 is the number, I believe that.
Do you know, Mr. Jordahl, do they currently, because as the language currently states, if authorized by the applicant for a driver's license or Minnesota identification card as identified in paragraph B, so we're just deleting that and then specifically stating in the bottom, and so you just need more time to review that to compare?
I would appreciate a bit more time to review that.
I will. I tend to agree with Representative Scott, but I will give the agency the time to review and get back to us.
Thank
so
you.
We will skip section 19 in the Senate language. Now we are on to section 20 in the Senate language. And this is Senator Hall's amendment, Senate file 1002, and it is also in section 34. This is giving the public defenders access to some data in the Department of Corrections. We have Bob Spore here from the Public Defender's Office. If anybody has any questions, you want to come up and say a few words.
My name is Bob Sikora. I work for the State Board of Public Defense. This is a that was then, this is now set of circumstances. Back then, when this language is originally limiting availability of jail booking data, it was done for a really laudatory purpose. Jail booking data was available only if you went to the local jail administrator. When that data went to the Department of Corrections, it was made private, and the laudatory goal was to protect people from accusations that weren't proven true, that you were jailed but then released and never charged, or charged and found to be not guilty. This is now the era of data harvesters, so all that data goes flowing from the jail administrator into the public realm and is sold on the internet. Thomson Reuters has a huge database of jail booking data. It still goes to the Department of Corrections where it becomes private. What that does for public defenders preparing huge numbers of cases for trial is it takes a state database and makes it inaccessible to them, forcing them to rely on the patchwork of data available at the data harvester level or the very manual process of going to those jail administrators, just like way back when the limitations were originally written into the law. So what this language does is it brings the law up to current practice, the world in which we live, full of data harvesters selling this data on the internet.
Any questions for Mr. Sikora? Representative Flesch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Sikora, why can't you not get this to the normal practice of discovery?
It is possible for a defender to use the discovery process to obtain information. That's an additional transaction on both sides of the adversary process, both for the defender and for the prosecutor. What we've found is that prosecutors tell many of our defenders, go get it yourself from the DOC database. I don't want to take the time to give you information that's so easily available.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions on this provision?
Just a comment, thank you, Madam Chair. I think the House Counsel Reed would like to discuss it a little bit amongst ourselves and maybe confer with another colleague or two about this.
We will postpone then section 20. County, and I believe it was section 34. Yeah, section 34. Thank you. Now we're on to section 21. In the Senate, in section 18 in the House. So this is identical. So Senator Rosen moves section 21 in the Senate language. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
The House is right on this.
Okay. This is section 22 in the Senate and 19 in the House. Here again, we're back to the singular and plural on lines 18.18 in the House, and I'm told the House language is the correct language.
Chair, I'll move adoption of the language in House section 19.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Do we want to have the discussion on the forensic laboratories, or do we want to wait?
Madam Chair,
Representative
this, we never heard this in the House, and I'm confused. I know this is Senator Latz's bill. I don't understand, first of all, why it's in the data practices bill. It seems to me that it would be appropriately placed in the public safety or public safety finance. There are no hearings on that. The first I heard any information about it at all was in the public safety and judiciary finance conference committee last week. And I am interested in hearing a lot more, but I don't know anything about it. No one in the House knows anything about it. So I don't know how we can consider it now.
So we'll hold off on that and just skip that for further discussion at a later date and move on to section 24 in the Senate and section 20 in the House, which appears to be identical. So Senator Rosen moves section 24 in the Senate. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Section 25 in the Senate and section 21 in the House are identical. So Senator Rosen moves section 25 in the Senate. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Section 25 is adopted. I believe the next section, 26 and 22, are also identical.
So
Senator Rosen moves section 26. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Bureau versus DC.
Okay. Section 27 in the Senate and 23 in the House are very similar. We get down to line 22.18 in the Senate and 20.2 in the House, where we have the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension language versus the Bureau. This is similar to the Met Council and Council language we had earlier. There's no preference. Senator Rosen moves section 27 of the Senate language.
I think there's some other substantive changes on the next page in that same section. Line 22, 23,
23, 23, 5. This, I believe, was an amendment that we added just to clarify that Minnesota law governs the data. This is Senator Limmer's addition. We also have there versus X on 23.2 and 20.22. Any grammatical discussion on that? What is correct? I think it should be just House language there. Okay, Representative, where are we here, 22, 21.
Madam Chair, yes, I'll move that on line 23.2 of the Senate language.
report there and insert the little bits.
And also line 23.9?
Yes.
All those in favor of the Representative Simon's motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Any further discussion on this section?
I'm sure I move the Senate language on section 27.
All in favor of Senator Rosen's motion to move Senate language section 27. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We are on to section 28 in the Senate language and section 24 in the House language. We are on to HR 23.
Senator
Blatch.
I was reading something else when we did that last section.
Yep.
Here, but I think maybe we need to hear from the BCA on the lines 23.5 and 23.6, which we just adopted. Senator Limmer got that in the Senate. Representative Scott offered it on the floor, and I asked her to defer that amendment, I believe, right, for purposes of further discussion. So I'm wondering if we could reconsider that last vote and hear from the BCA on their concerns with that language.
I'm fine with that. Any Representative Lesh moves to reconsider the last motion to hear from the department. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Yes.
Madam Chair, Katie Angler from the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. The language in 22.35 regarding classification of data could be problematic with respect to Minnesota judiciary, which is specifically exempt under section 13.90 from chapter 13. I think the difference in what the amendment Representative Scott offered and the language that's here is that her amendment specifically referred to chapter 13. Minnesota law governing the classification of data includes the court rules of public access, then the court may be okay, but without a clarification relating to that, this may be problematic with respect to transactions involving courts.
Is there anybody here from the courts? No. So at that point, I'm going to move that we reconsider the last.
Madam Chair, I'd be open to making the change that she suggested by adding that.
Can you restate language that would?
Madam Chair, and with help from counsel, I'm looking at line 22.35, and I'm wondering if something along the lines of Minnesota law governing the classification of the data, including the court rules of public access to records of the judicial branch.
I'm sure. Ms. Angler, the email that I recall had those concerns, but there were multiple concerns too. Would that language change address all of your concerns?
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, you're correct, and I'm struggling a little bit to remember everything that was in that email from me. I know that we have a couple of Indian tribes in the state who are not subject to Chapter 13. They are not what are called Public Law 280 tribes who have specific statutory authority here and agreed to be subject to Chapter 13. There are some issues with respect to federal agencies and the fact that they may say that as federal agencies, their federal laws trump state law provisions with respect to how they handle the data once they get it. But I think the court piece is probably the biggest piece with respect to transactions back and forth between the criminal justice agencies through the Bureau.
Okay. Well, thank you. Well, Madam Chair, I guess I would suggest we move forward with that suggested language change then and then see what shakes out after implementation. If there are other ongoing issues.
Well, another idea, because we will be coming back to discuss several other provisions, would be to have Ms. Ingram if possible, just check on her notes and to make sure that we're not missing anything else. And then also, we can check with the tribes to make sure this doesn't have any problems to them. And then just read the section and then come back if that's okay with everybody. Okay, so just to clarify, we are going to, we're holding off on section 27. Yes, we're holding off on Senate section 27 to get additional concerns and make sure the court is okay with the language on line 2.35 and 2.23.6 in the Senate. And we'll also check the tribes if anybody's okay with that. So now we're on. Section Senate section 28 and House section 24. We have on 24.18 in the Senate language and 22.2 on the House language shall versus cannot.
Madam Chair, I'll move the until here the Senate language is probably the better approach. So I'll move the Senate language.
Okay, Representative Simon moves the Senate language in section 28. All in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
There's a language difference on
25.21
and
23.8. Okay, let's just stick with 29. It's just on, there's 24.29 to 25.2 of the Senate language on R24, section 29. Senator Rosen moves Senate language for section 29. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, so now we're on section 30 in the Senate and section 26 in the House, which there is some differences.
I can use the House language on that. I think it clarifies it a little bit.
All righty.
Hit versus him.
Okay, Representative Scott moves the Senate, the House language on section 26. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Madam Chairman, I think it's just if you look on R26 on the House on 24.14 and 24.22, there's a comma after system, which I think helps break the sentence up better.
All right. And that's the only difference?
I believe that's it.
Yep.
Madam Chair, there's also on the Senate side, line 26.26, it says that the Commissioner shall forward the information on the House side.
Representative Simon.
What I'll do is I'll just move on the Senate language on line 26.29. I'll move to insert a comma after the word system.
Okay. All those in favor of Senator Simon, Representative Simon's motion, say aye.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
There's another comma after systems on the House side, 26.22.
No, 27.1, towards the end of the sentence, criminal background check system, comma. Senator Rosen moves insertion of the comma after system on line 27.1 in the Senate language. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, now we're going back to the leave. Representative Simon's motion to move the House Senate language. as amended on section 31. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And then I'm going to actually ask if we can take a break right here, because I believe we have, this gets back to, and I'd just like the Department of Revenue to discuss it so the House side and the Senate, Senator Rosen, can hear about it briefly. This is the language that was in the Senate tax bill regarding the data provisions, and was included in a separate file in the House bill. And so I would just like to give them the opportunity to just explain it before we break and leave some people in the room again. Ms. Von Mosch, is that okay with everybody? So that we can give you some time to absorb it a little bit.
There about whether this was already included in Chapter 13 and whether it was needed. We took the comments and concerns of that committee back and we studied those concerns, and we do feel that this provision is still needed as it relates to things like the Federal Schedule F, which is a document that is used for classifications relating to Green Acres and some other property tax benefits that where they use the income tax information. We reviewed information that is currently on file, and we feel that most of the information in chapter 270B provides data privacy when that information is supplied to the Commissioner of Revenue. However, those protections are not in place for county assessors, property tax assessors. And I can walk through the amendment if you would like, but that is basically what this amendment does. And we also have technical staff here if you, our attorney, if you would like to ask them further questions.
Madam Chair, no questions. I think this is one where the House conferees might want to confer with one another on the side. This in bill form currently resides in Representative Rush's committee, and so I want to defer to him personally. Three conferees will want to talk.
Madam Chair, there is some confusion about what happened. It's got, it says no House companion. We were trying to figure out what happened. It's at the end of deadline, so if we can circle back.
So I just thought since they were here, I know they have to leave, we could at least get them on the start the discussion. We only do the today, so I just want to get that out there, if that's okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Any questions from Ms. Von Mosch or the attorney while they're here?
And Madam Chair members, we're available if you would like to talk with us offline about this also.
Okay, thank you. I know they have to leave to go to the desk. Thank you. So I think we're going to just continue to do some of the same and similars, and then when we get to the part that are different, so we're just going to continue on. We're just going to continue on and then finish up, and then we'll probably have to schedule another meeting for some of the other building board discussion. So we left off at section 32 of the Senate bill and section 28 of the House bill on page R26. And if you have that, it is identical.
Madam Chair, I so move the Senate in section 32.
So Senator Rosen moves Senate section 32. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Section 32 of the Senate language is adopted. Yes, Representative
Chair, I think these are almost identical, except I think I personally favor the House language instead of their sign on 28-28. Yes, the applicant's sign. So I'll move the House language for House section 29.
Okay, all in favor of Representative Simon's motion to adopt House Section 29. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? So the House language is adopted.
To public defenders.
All right. And so we're going to, this is the next Section 34 in the Senate is the public defender's status. So we are going to hold off on that so that the House can discuss it. And then 28, we are on the Senator Stevens bill in the Senate in the House language. Plus, do you want to, I'm familiar with it because I heard of the judiciary, but if someone is here to discuss it, to discuss it. Senator Rosen, that would be helpful. Anybody have any comments on House File Section 30? They basically just add, a lot of this is already law, and they just add that the review team has access to corrections and detention data as provided in Section 1385.
Madam Chair, to the extent this helps, this was not a controversial provision in the House. I would imagine that it wouldn't be in the Senate as well, or either. But I do realize it's in language.
It's on the Senate floor. Consent. Okay. Madam Chair, I move the House Section 30. All right, Senator Rosen moves House Section 30. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. We actually adopted Section 35. And so now we are on to Section 36 and 37, and these I know are the controversial sections. Senator Marty was going to attempt to be here. He might be in finance. And we had another bill. Matthew, can you talk? Yep. The Department of Health here? Yes. Could you talk it up and explain Section 36 and 37? And I believe, in the Senate at least, Section 37 became, if I remember right, Section 37 became less controversial. We still have Section 36. So if you could state your name for the record and just kind of walk through what Section 36.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Jim Cobble. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Health. The understanding I have is this amendment requires the Department of Health to come back next year with a report to the legislature on what we will do to collect and store our newborn screening blood destroyed after 71 days, and all data is destroyed after 2 years. The way that we collected prior to that in the court decision in November of 2011 was there was parents would have to opt out of that. Now, what would be required is an opt-in in order for any of those blood spots or data to be collected and stored. We don't currently have a system, excuse me, to do that. And this would be coming back to the legislature with a system to do that in accordance with the newborn screening legislation.
And then, so was that in 37 where you were going to come back with the results?
Yes, I'm sorry. I went to the wrong section then, didn't I? It was in 36.
It's kind of related. So in section 37, it is authorizing a study that Department of Health and others will come back by February 14th. To the chairs to review the newborn screening programs, and it provides all of that. And then in section 36 is a discussion on, based on the lawsuit, my understanding is based on the lawsuit, the legislature then, the court threw some stuff out, and the legislature came back, and correct me if I'm wrong, the legislature came back and said, okay, you have till November 16, 2011 to figure this out, and then stuff will be destroyed. And then we have this, so November 16th was the court case, sorry. And then they came back, and the legislature set this date of June 14th, 2014. Am I correct?
Madam Chair, the court decision required that all data prior to November 16th and blood spots, all data and blood spots prior to November 16th, 2011 be destroyed. Mm-hmm. That was a Supreme Court order. Mm-hmm. Due to the ongoing, the court was remanded, or the case was remanded to district court, and the court required that we hold that data and blood spot because it may come into play in the district court. But as soon as that court case is over, that data is to be destroyed and those blood spots are to be destroyed. So everything prior to November 16th of 2011. What this amendment would do is saying beginning, based on last year's legislation, we said beginning November 16th, 2011, that's kind of the new clock, beginning 2011, November 16, 2011, all blood spots would be destroyed after 71 days, all data destroyed after 2 years. So what this amendment addresses are beginning this November of, this November of 2013, that 2 year period will come up for data. We will begin destroying data on November 16th of 2013 because that 2 year period will be up. This amendment extends that period of time, that initial period of time from November till I believe June 1st, that no data would be destroyed. Blood spots have been destroyed, being destroyed, and will continue to be, but this is just impacting the data. So that's what this amendment attempts to do.
Madam Chair, my understanding from the testimony that we had before the committee was that the goal here of Section 36 is just to act as a bridge to preserve the underlying data until the study in Section 37 can be completed and information returned to the legislature so that we can consider all of that information next spring. If the legislative decision next spring is let the data destruction go ahead, then we do that. If we decide to make changes based on the information from the study, we can do that too. But of course, once the data is destroyed, you can't recapture it. So the idea was at least preserve it until we get the study results back, and then we can make more informed decisions at that point.
That answered my question.
name, state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Troy LeBrays, President of the Citizens Council for Health Freedom. The interesting thing, I think, about this particular section of the bill is that we still have the Genetic Privacy Act in place. We haven't repealed it. And thus, these individuals who went to the court and all the individuals who are currently having babies in this state are still under the genetic privacy law. And what we're really about informed consent. And what we're really saying here is sort of that we're going to put another law into place that I believe is in conflict with the genetic privacy law, because there are children, about 35,000 children, who would now have their genetic test results retained. And so I believe this would be in conflict with the Genetic Privacy Act. The department should be asking for consent, should have been asking for consent this entire time if they were wondering about it. But we look at this as a method to give one more legislative session to get back or to be able to preserve forever the genetic test results, which is what the University of Minnesota testified to, that that is what they want, have everybody's genetic test results. So we are interested in the court case being followed as the court case was followed and the genetic privacy law as the genetic privacy law requires, and not having an extension to try to get more access to the, or longer prolonged access to the genetic privacy results.
Thank you. Ms. Grace, but what about the study in Section 37? Wouldn't it make some sense to at least wait until we have the outcome of the study?
For one thing, the genetic test results are kept by the court case for 24 months. They can continue the study. This is a department that the parents actually had to take it all the way to the Minnesota Supreme Court for them to even get consent. Even though the law said they had to have consent, they were not willing to do so. So this is a department that, as far as we're concerned, is not a department that should be trusted with additional time to keep genetic information. They have willfully not followed the law previously, and that is why there are two class action lawsuits at this time after they won the last Supreme Court ruling. So we would not appreciate giving them longer time. The genetic privacy law requires informed written consent.
Madam Chair, I'll point out that on lines 30.35 to 31.1, the parent or legal guardian of the subject of the data can, if they have a particular objection, request that the test results be destroyed. So it doesn't force anyone who really objects to it to hang on to that data forever. Then the next sentence describes exactly when that would happen, within 1 month of receipt of the request or 1 month of the standard retention period. Test results, whichever is later, and I think that standard retention period is expired, or it's 2 years, I think, if I recall correctly. So a parent that is really, really concerned about their child's data being kept can have it destroyed. But this is a very large and informative and important database for purposes of public health, and as you can see, from the letters being distributed to you, it's very significant in the eyes of the medical community and the research community, because it can have the effect of saving a lot of babies, and certainly saving them from lifelong consequences. So at least we can have a more fully informed discussion next spring when we get the study back. And you'll notice that the due date for the study is February 1st, 2014. That was intentional, so there's ample opportunity for all of us to have a more fully informed discussion about this next spring and decide, you know, collectively what's the best route to take.
Thank you. Madam Chair, how are parents notified that this information exists in order that they can know enough to make a signed data form requesting destruction? How do I know what's out there? I mean,
So I have one child, and I don't remember all the forms that had to be signed after that, but I'm assuming one of those forms is that, in the myriad of forms, that this information exists out there. Is there a form like that?
Ms. Fraser, Mr. Koppel, do you have an answer?
I will answer from our perspective, Madam Chair, and thank you for that. So there are forms up there if the parents consider using the entire form. What I would like to say in the forms that are there are about actually now opting out of the actual screening. And there is a form, I believe, regarding the consent provision. Although maybe Mr. Koppel can say as to what's actually in the hospitals at the moment. But the thing that I would like to say about what Senator Lett said,
it's happened before. No offense taken at all.
Is that there is a complete distinction between informed written consent and dissent. And one of them, the consent requires that the health department cannot do anything without the written consent of the parents. And dissent means the health department can go ahead unless the parents figure out in the frenzy and frenetic and in, fatiguing time that is labor and delivery, that they figure out what has happened. If they figure that out and they read all the fine lines, then they can, you know, they can dissent. They have to, you know, figure it out first in the midst of the baby. So there's a very big difference between dissent and consent.
So Madam Chair, yep. I have another question follow based on that. And I understand your perspective, Ms. Braze, is that the burden should be on the government in this instance, but indulge me, speculate. What could this information be used for 20 years down the line where I, as a parent, should really be worried? I mean, I think we've moved past the eugenics conversations mostly, but is it down that road that you're worried about, that potential, or what kinds of things should I be worried about? Enough to say, hang on a second, we should change the law on this, or we should maintain it.
Madam Chair and Representative Lesh, I think there are a lot of things, and I think there are things that we don't know because we are not in the science community for, you know, what they are looking at as possibilities. But just on a general basis, I think that very clearly NIH and others are talking about the time when every child should be genomically sequenced at birth, because this is becoming very inexpensive to do a full genomic sequence of the DNA and therefore have that all on record. So it was Francis Collins, who was head of the NIH, who said, like it or not, eventually every newborn will be genomically sequenced. And so that is obviously a government function in today's world of policy. And so when we look at genomically sequencing the child and finding everything out about their DNA, all their potentials, even though they may or may not happen in reality, could be influenced by the environment, could be influenced by how long they actually live, you know, several things. But the fact of the matter is, eventually, if you look down, you can see the possibility of full genomic sequencing. You can see the possibility that would become government data, that could be making decisions about how you contain costs. You know, if you had the genomic sequence of one child and the genomic sequence of another child, and when one of them is 18 and another one is 21 and they decide to get married, what will that mean for healthcare costs? What is the potential? You know, that we would know everybody's traits, everybody's recessive traits, everything that could come together. I think that when we look at our DNA, what we see is our own genetic blueprint, who we are. And the government would have access to this data for who knows what reason. And eventually they won't need the blood spots when they have the genomic sequence and they have all the data. They'll have the entire thing all in code. So, you know, that's what we look at when we look at the future. But we also just look at the DNA ownership rights. It's our ability to control the genetic information that the government has on us, both the DNA and the test results, and the mother. And a lot of people forget about that. But when the government does a genetic test on the child, they learn a lot of information about the mother.
Madam Chair, and Ms. Braze, I share your paranoia to a certain extent.
And I kind of wonder about this, and I don't know what I should think, and the insistence upon there being this metadata that we can use, I wonder about that. That said, I also, in the 6 terms I've served in the legislature, I realize that you, technologically speaking, you can't get the toothpaste back in the tube. Once it's out, it's out. So I struggle with that as well. The technology is out there. It's going to be used somehow. And how do we effective manage it? And so I'm thinking now, I'm wondering about how this language moves toward that or it doesn't. So that's just a statement.
Madam Chair, may I add one additional thing? And that would be that the consent forms that we see or the dissent forms that we see focus more on what the risk will be as far as the current health of the child. But I rarely see anything that focuses on the risk that parents should be thinking about when it comes to giving the health department access to their child's genetic information or the ability to store it or analyze it or research it. And so, you know, things like when your child turns 18, will they like the fact that their DNA is, or their genetic test results are in the hands of the government? Or what will this mean for employment? Or what could this mean for, all sorts of things. Just other things that parents should be thinking about. Those kind of risks are not in the consent form. And actually, there are genetic information organizations that have a whole list of things that you should, when you counsel people about giving over their DNA or their genetic information, that you should counsel them to think far and wide about what this really means. And most parents, they're just having a baby.
Does Mr. Koppel or anybody else have any other follow-up? I'm going to also see Senator Marty is here.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to clarify a couple of things. One, we do not currently collect blood spots or data, have the ability to collect blood spots or data beyond the 71 days for blood spots or the 2 years for data. That's what the report next year, if it were to be approved, would provide as a mechanism for that to happen. What we have passed in the newborn screening law last year is that any collection of blood spots or data will be an opt-in, will be by consent, and that consent form will have a Tennyson warning. So all of that is covered in our collection methodology now. So while there may be fears of future science or various things that may not be in our control, what we have set up in when we are able to collect blood spots and data, it will be with consent. The form will have a Tennyson warning. That is clear. Okay.
And do you know, so we've had this discussion on this 2 years and on this 2 years so we get to the November 13 date. Was that in the court order, or did the court kick it back to the district courts, and then did they kick it back to the legislature, and did the legislature pick that 2 years, and does anybody know how that was determined?
Yes, Madam Chair. Everything prior to November 16th of 2011 is in the hands of the court. What was passed last year in the newborn screening legislation was beginning November 16th of 2011 going forward, that the data would be kept for 2 years. That 2 years was picked because it's a compliance issue with federal regulation that requires labs to keep data for 2 years. So that was the 2 year. The 71 days was somewhat arbitrary date for blood spots, but the 2 years was based on that regulation.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Eric Dick, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Medical Association, also the American Academy of Pediatrics Minnesota chapter.
The MMA and the AAP are strong supporters of the state's newborn screening program and urge you to adopt sections 36 and 37 of the Senate bill. Saving data about newborn screening results is critical. Its importance is twofold. It's important for public health and its promise, and it's essential for patient care and outcomes for children. Newborn screening of any kind is a process, not a single event. It extends beyond the simple performance of a test and across the lifespan of a baby identified with a severe condition. Though we know testing saves lives, there's no way to know the ultimate value of newborn screening without longer-term follow-up. Under these two narrow sections, the mandatory disruption of newborn screening test results will be postponed for a mere 6 months, a delay that will allow the legislature to consider a report that MDH is tasked with preparing regarding long-term storage. Importantly, and in a concession that still rankles many in the pediatric and research community, the proposal does not stall the destruction of actual blood spots. The two-year retention period established by the legislature last year was done so with some haste. We believe the legislature should take a short pause to more fully consider the implications of the disruption of test results. On a more individual level, pediatricians are very concerned of plans to destroy newborn screening test data for the simple reason it's often used directly to provide care for the youngest patients. Ms. Brace spoke of genomic testing 20 years from now. I'll share an example of how this is important today. It's common practice for healthcare providers to directly contact MDH when information about a child's newborn results is urgently needed. For instance, when a three-year-old presents at an emergency room with an urgent symptom like seizures, very blood, high acidity, or coma, any of which could be a presenting problem for some of the screen conditions, a call to MDH can immediately simplify and ensure proper care. And furthermore, having access to a record of test results can prove life-saving for siblings of children born with or without screen conditions. Destruction of test results will sow confusion and needless anxiety, may delay care, and require additional and expensive testing. In summary, it is the opinion of Minnesota's physicians that for both public health and individual health reasons, it is simply wrong to destroy medically important data without a thoughtful, science-based conversation. Again, the MMA and Minnesota's pediatricians strongly urge you to adopt Senate Sections 36 and 37 to encourage a thoughtful and respectful assessment of the best means for our Department of Health to serve public health good for the people of Minnesota. Having the opportunity to assess that and report back to policymakers such as yourself will allow just that. Destroying the data before such an assessment takes place will do irreparable harm. And with that, I'll take any questions, Madam Chair.
I have, Madam Chair, I just have more of a comment. I mean, we're not challenging the worthwhileness of having these tests. We know that they're important tests. What we are challenging is that the court gave a ruling, and the court gave the Department of Health a certain period of time. And so, you know, I don't know what an additional 7 months is really going to do. I don't like this language. I think it's the Department of Health trying to go around the court decision to a certain extent. And if everybody did that, then we would have no rule of law in this country. But I do have a question for Mr. Koppel, if he could come back up. Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Mr. Koppel, just how would this additional 7 months or so impact genetic privacy law?
The Madam Chair, Representative Scott, are you saying that, just to be clear, how would it impact the court decision or the...
You know, in this in-between time.
So the court decision basically said, in order for you to collect or store anything that has to do with genetic privacy, you need express authority or you need a consent. What the newborn screening legislation did was clarify the express authority around the newborn screening program. So the law that was adopted last year said that the data would be kept for 2 years. this, it would change that, amend that law to say it would be for purposes of waiting for the report, but there would be an additional roughly 7 months extension from the period of planned destruction. So it would be not an attorney, I think I've said that many times to some of you, but I believe it would just be an extension of the period that we have in law by amending it. So it's from that vantage point, it doesn't impact the court case. The court case said that Minnesota should have that any program that collects biological specimens or data needs consent or express authority or law, okay, which is that. And that's what we now have.
Senator Marty, did you wish to testify?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Conference Committee. These two provisions, I was carrying the other provisions from the Health Department on the other records to make sure that the state did, that the Health Department had express authority, which is what's in, I believe, both versions of the bill. The issue with the newborn screening, when the legislature set those two-month and two-year roughly timelines last year, if you as a parent having a child want the data, and you want the genetic information, the blood spot or the data kept, you don't have a way to do that. It's going to be tossed. It's going to be tossed under those timelines, which is appropriate for the way it came into being and so on. However, the point of, I think it's Section 37, the study is to have the department report back on meeting with the community, scientific community, and so what's needed, how what's in the uses of the data, what's in the uses of the genetic material, and so on, and then come back to us and report on how we could do a set up a system of consent so that we could have it kept long term, because a lot of parents, I argue most parents, probably want it kept, if for nothing else, for the sake of their own child. The screening test results, the postponement of the destruction of the data. Again, the blood spots are being destroyed every day and the two-month-old stuff is being destroyed. But we haven't started destroying the data yet because that won't be till this November when the two-year period kicks in from the court decision. The legislature gave the department the authority to keep them that long and no longer. Parents don't have any say. I would argue most parents don't have any knowledge. When the blood test is given to the newborn, the blood spots are destroyed months and the data in 2 years, and the parents aren't ever told. They can't opt in, they can't opt out, they can't anything, which is why we have to set up the system so parents can opt in. But until that time, there's no way for the parents of these children who were born since November 16th, 2011 to say, we want that data kept. And if the health department comes up with a reasonable way that we can say, we're going to give you the chance to opt in, I think we ought to preserve those blood spots, not the blood spots, blood spots are destroyed already, to save the data so it can be useful for that parent, that child, for their medical providers, so it can be there. I think that's very worth doing. And yes, what we're giving here on the language about the commissioner, parent or guardian may provide signed and dated form requesting destruction of the test results. They don't have that ability now. And if you had a child born a year ago, you're not knowing that they are saving the data for 2 years. The law says they save it for 2 years. We're saying keep it an extra 6.5 months so that the legislature can have a look at this when the department reports back. So we're not destroying data against parents' will. If it's against parents' will that we've been keeping it for 2 years, they haven't had any say over it, either destruction or saving it. That's already the law. All we're trying to do is say, please save the data until we can look at it, because otherwise we're destroying stuff without parents' intent to have that happen. Let's give the parents the chance if we can.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Marty, just a procedural question more than anything. I've just been trying to figure this out on my own, but maybe you could tell me, is this language that's in the Senate Data Practice Bill, is that part of your original bill, or is that something separate that you came up with?
That was put into the original bill. It was added in the original bill in the first committee. That did not come to the Department of Health. That came from medical providers who were very concerned about the destruction of faith.
Okay. And Senator, Madam Chair, and Senator Marty, I ask because I'm just trying to connect the dots here with the House, and it looks like the companion bill has been carried by Senator Kahn and others, including Representative Holberg, I might add, who's an author. It's gone through its two committee steps in the House. It's on the House floor right now awaiting action. And what I don't know is whether this language appears in Representative Kahn's bill. Do you happen to know that, or maybe Department does?
Madam Chair, Representative Simon, no, it is not in there. And I talked with Representative Holberg when I was moving to put this language into our bill, because I know she's the one who is most involved in this, and she doesn't, I'm not saying she agrees with this. I wanted to be respectful because she worked hard on this and so on. I don't think this is an unfair change, because right now, nobody on either side, those who want it destroyed or those who want it kept, have any say in it. And that's why I think the study next year, and I haven't heard any opposition to that. I don't know, maybe there is. But I don't think there's opposition to that. But the destruction of the results, it just seems to me that, you know, let's save it so parents can have the choice. And I know it's an extra, for somebody who wants it destroyed immediately, it might be a little extra burden. Right now it's being kept for 2 years, and they can't even know that. I mean, I don't think they know that it's being kept for 2 years. Now being kept for 2 years and six months. And then they'll be able to have a choice. If they hear about this and want to destroy it earlier, they can have it destroyed earlier.
Madam Chair, and Representative Simon, I'm wondering if this isn't something that we, the House Conference, ever talk about additionally, and we just need to put this aside for
I just happened to have the answer here, and I believe Mr. Newmeister, do you also want to comment on these two sections?
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Rich Newmeister. I have this conflict whether or not to go to the Timber J Supreme Court case on another data practices or here. I went to the other one, but shot back here, but I guess you already adopted the email address. I don't know. We'll find out in a second. But anyways, my question is just on 37 of the Senate language. When you talk about advocacy groups and medical research, it's been my long time experience that sometimes whoever chooses, they can stack the deck. And on an emotional issue like this, I think it's important that there be, you know, a little bit of balance of folks. So if, you know, you're going to come back to this, you might want to take a look as to who should be, who's going to select, who's going to be part of the group. You might want to get a little bit more specifics. Because you don't at the same time want to come back and fight this issue again. One of the things that my experience has been sometimes if it's stacked one way or the other, the other side's going to come back to the legislature anyways, but if you give it evenly balanced, you can get some good product. Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for the few moments of your time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Minister, I have a question. The very suggestion that we wouldn't have to come back and talk about the same provisions in data practices surprised me. You suggest that. I mean, as technology changes, inevitably, we're going to be talking about the same thing the next time there's a next leap forward in technology. Would you agree?
Possibility, but I'm just saying in terms of the recommendation. I mean, I was even going to make another kind of recommendation to Madam Chair, on this particular issue, I've been sort of like on the sidelines. I'll put my two cents in with individuals on my personal perspective. But I'm focusing on this right now, but the other point, because the Department of Health, I don't know if Mr. Koppel gave it to you, but it gave a listing of all the things that the Department of Health collects, genetic or material, body fluids, things like that, to where there can be samples done. And they collect thousands upon thousands of them. So if you wanted to make us, you know, this study that you're talking about, other than just child-born screening, but also about the general policy of how the Department of Health deals with all its thousands and thousands of other of samples and materials, whether destruction provisions, how long they keep it, do they send it off to the Mayo Clinic or some other folks for other kinds of research. I got some opinions on some of that based on some of the data and discussions I've had with various people, but that's up to you. So I'm just, Madam Chair, I'm just reacting to where Representative Lesch talked about bigger things that were going to have to deal with these things in the future. I just shoot that off as they want to expand the studies, because there are issues further down, as evident by, if you have received, Madam Chair, that four-page item that tells you about what their databases are and the kinds of where they collect body fluids, whether it be from HIV, the venereal disease, you go on and on and on. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
The moment's your time.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize. I haven't done much with data privacy in the past. It seems like this issue has been around a very long time in Gordon's Green. I did do worked on this a little bit in 05, I believe. But I don't think anybody on this around this table sits on Health and Human Services Budget Committee. And that's where the rubber hits the road when it comes to this type of issue and the role that the department has to play. It seems like their goal line keeps extending out there, and our dollars that are being spent on health, as you all know, is tremendous. So I appreciate the fine line that we're balancing here, but I also, you know, I look at these letters from MMA and the Pediatrics Academy, and this is a very serious issue that we have to respect their intentions also, and I think we can get this right.
Okay, any other questions for anybody here or discussion? And then, you know, the House wants to think about this. I mean, I agree, Senator Wilson, I think these are big, big questions and big sessions. I do think that this will continue to impact us because I think technology will change, and I think we will continue to have these issues come forward. So, any other discussions on this issue? We have one last section, section 38 in the Senate and section 31 in the House, and that's the repealer. This is from the transfer public safety bill. This is actually, if I'm right, it repeals the McGrath-House language, which is bad. They no longer do that program. For those of us old enough to remember the McGrath-Houses.
Delete McGrath?
Yeah. It's an obsolete program, I guess, and so this just repeals that language. It's the same, and so Senator Latz moves.
Wait.
Okay. I will move. Yeah, we'll move.
Madam Chair, you can. I'll make the motion.
All right, Senator Latz makes the motion to include Senate Language 38. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So unfortunately, we are leaving Mr. McGraw. So I think we have a few things left for to discuss and for the House to consider, since we have a lot of additional, some of them hopefully are controversy, others are just discussion purposes. So in
Madam Chair, were you contemplating getting together later today or tomorrow?
It can be kind of. I was going to leave that for us to decide based on schedules. I know the Senate's not going until 12:30. I don't know how long we will be. I don't know about the House. So.
Madam Chair, we're going in at noon. Selfishly, on which I serve, back to hear somewhat noteworthy bill.
Mm-hmm.
And that might take a while, so I don't know how possible today is, but maybe we can just continue to trade messages and obviously notify the public throughout the afternoon. I would say it's less than 50% chance that we'll have the time to reconvene today. But not with bill or not.
Thank you. Any other discussion?
I think I said, Madam Chair, I said everything that I wanted to say in the President Blackstone. We don't have any. Safety, Judiciary, Finance Conference Committee. And I just think it's a, in my opinion, to their lads, I want to have this conversation in the interim about what's required. If you come to your conclusion about what's appropriate, I want to find out if I agree with that, but I want to find out if the other members agree with that too. And I just don't know.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Lapp.
Sounded to me at first like Representative Lesh thought it more appropriately belonged in the Public Safety and Judiciary bill, which if he's willing to accept it there, I'm perfectly happy to put it there as well. We're both on that conference committee. And there would be some more overlap in terms of membership as well. But I know that Representative Lesh is quite familiar with this whole topic, being as it stems out of an issue relating to St. Paul. Mr. Lesh is in the St. Paul City Attorney's Office, which had to deal with the whole St. Paul Crime Lab issue in court. It's also a bit difficult for me to understand why this bill was not dropped and given a hearing in a timely fashion in the House when there was plenty of opportunity to give it a full hearing in Representative Lesh's committee and the other committees that were had jurisdiction over this, but it was not handled in the House. It's obviously a matter of some urgency because there is evidence that is being offered for consideration in criminal cases in court every day right now. It's being taken, analyzed every day as we speak, and there are labs that are not properly accredited that are quite possibly mishandling this evidence, which is jeopardizing the safety of the public. It's jeopardizing legal cases. All you have to do is look at all the news stories and all the underlying litigation that has flowed from the absolute incompetence, frankly, of the St. Paul Crime Lab in the way all this stuff was handled. I mean, everywhere from just standard procedures not being followed, all sorts of questions about contaminated evidence, cases thrown out because the evidence was mishandled, data or information, evidence that was simply misread. There was some cases where they didn't find controlled substances, where on retesting there actually was controlled substance and they were able to bring charges. And there are other cases where they found controlled substances that didn't exist, which has resulted in at least several cases being thrown out, where charges were brought against, it turns out, probably innocent individuals. I don't think the legislature, and I don't think the public, and I don't think individuals who are accused of crimes and threatened with imprisonment have another year or 2 years to wait around until we require some meaningful standards that be followed. This bill before us did go through the committee process in the Senate. Again, I'm baffled by the fact that it wasn't introduced in a timely fashion in the House, and I know its chief author is now Representative Simon, but he was my backup because it sat on a desk for several weeks. The bill came over from the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee and apparently sat on a desk for several weeks in the House without even being read or dropped in the hopper. And then it was denied an opportunity for a hearing before the deadline and even an informational hearing shortly after the deadline. So there has been plenty of opportunity for the House to consider the merits of this bill. We had extensive hearings. We had two hearings in the Senate on this at which there was lots of testimony taken. And all of the parties that seemed to have an interest, including the St. Paul Crime Lab, came in and said this is something that works for them. And I heard directly from folks affiliated with the St. Paul Crime Lab, and the BCA was involved heavily in drafting this language as well. Probably the only person not happy about this was the current forensic lab accreditation or board, not the accreditation board, the advisory board, that did not get a new lease on life in this process. The timing that is in here gives ample opportunity for labs to get up to speed, to initiate a process, to make public that they're initiating the process of accreditation. It ultimately concludes that if they're not accredited, then their evidence can't be used in court, which I think is at least a basic standard that protects all participants in our justice system. If we wait another year to deal with this, there's going to be at least 1 year of less confidence in the outcomes of our judicial system. And I don't think that's fair to the public. I don't think that's fair to the prosecutors that rely on this evidence to prove their cases. And I don't think it's fair to the defendants that deserve to have this evidence be as reliable as possible if they're going to be facing possibly many, many years in prison as a result of this evidence. So there's my pitch on this. The fact is that the House has not taken an adverse position on this legislation. The House has taken no position on this legislation. I think it's well worth hearing from the folks that are interested here now, or we could do it in the Judiciary and Public Safety Conference Committee instead, if that is Representative Lesch's wish. I'm agnostic on that point. I think it would be well worth the time of the legislature to do it this year.
Madam Chair and Senator Latz, this evidence that was called into question was not called into question because a bill was put before the legislature or because someone announced that they wanted to do a particular bill. It was called into question because of two very enterprising attorneys, one of with whom I went to law school, Lori Traub, and she brought on another attorney, and they were pit bulls on this matter. And they were very effective and brought to light the issues that affected the St. Paul crime lab. That's why these issues are being litigated right now, not because of anything that we presented to the legislature. Now, if it's really that important to you that this language will obviate that in the future, as opposed to defense attorneys being very effective, as these two defense attorneys were, then that's something that I think you should have brought up to the House. If you mailed a bill over to the House, over to me, then it was that important to you, I think you probably should have had a discussion with me that, no, this needs to be heard. As it stood, I received a call from you during deadline week when we were up to our eyeballs in all kinds of other bills. When I heard about it from you back in November, when this brought to, I didn't hear about it from you. I read an article in the press that you intended to do something. I expected that I would have heard from you. The first time I heard from you on the matter was during deadline week. You sent a bill over along with a myriad of bills that I had as a chairman before that. I didn't see it, or I glanced over it and expected that more action would be taken on it. And no action was taken, as was the case with dozens, perhaps hundreds of that are proposed to the House during the course of the legislative session. That being the case, deadline week is not the time to bring it up, and certainly if deadline week is not the time to bring it up, conference committee is not the time to bring it up. It's something that should probably be discussed in the interim. That's all, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Senator Latz.
Well, just for the record, Representative Lesch heard from me when I sent the jackets over several weeks before deadlines. And we kept watching bill introductions, and nothing got introduced. That's when we made the follow-up call to find out if they were going to be dropped, and when it was apparent that they weren't, we were told they weren't, we sought a different author, at least get it introduced. And we had several conversations thereafter, trying to get the bill heard in front of the committee, trying to get the House to have an informational hearing on the topic. And frankly, we were stonewalled each time. The response was, sorry, no can do. When we could get a response, candidly. I'm not ever suggesting that legislation is going to solve all problems. Certainly, good defense attorneys who are looking out for the interests of people who are charged with crimes have a responsibility to challenge the admissibility of evidence, and including the procedures in the labs that are creating the data from the evidence. But we as a legislature have an opportunity, and I'd say a responsibility, when we learn about these things, to take appropriate steps to try to make sure these things don't happen again. And that's the significance of this legislation and why I think it's very important. I don't see any reason why we can't have some informational gathering right now and see if people are comfortable with the substance of what is proposed here.
Okay, I'm sure one of my favorite movies is Cool Hand Luke. And one of the best lines out of that is, what we have here is a failure to communicate. Maybe we can do that, Senator Lance, but from what we hear back in our respective bodies during Conference Committee repeatedly is the cramming of that communication and try to make it all happen very quickly. And I think the public should expect more of that. Communication probably should have happened sooner. I agree with you. But it didn't. So let's get that conversation started now. I'm not sure that it can all happen in an abridged time frame, but I'm willing to start that conversation. I think it should happen.
Madam Chair, if you don't mind, I am the newbie on the block here, but my first comment is that you never send a bill over to the House expecting it to sit there. You always expect the author to go ahead and throw it in. And so I would assume Senator Lass felt that it was going to be put into the hopper. Number two, Representative Lesh, can you explain exactly in this language where you are having problems? I mean, I guess I'm still not clear why you're having problems with this language besides the fact that you did not, it was not heard in the House. Is there a problem with the substance of it?
I don't, Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, I don't know, because we haven't heard it. So I haven't heard. If Senator Lass has had two full Senate hearings on it. Normally I would say that it would probably call for at least that in the House. And we haven't had it, so I haven't heard from the players. Now, if we want to take 2 days of conference committee to do that, that would be one way that we do things. However, no one is here. We sat on the House Judiciary Committee or the House, I mean, I sit on that committee, but the other members out of here, or the Public Safety Committee. Those members aren't here. So we bring it back and they would say, well, wait a second, why wasn't I part of that vetting process? So I just don't think the time is right to do that now. And asking me, well, what do you have a problem with respect to the languages, I just can't give you an answer. I don't know, because we haven't had the hearing.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm just looking at the language and trying to figure out, you know, there are always compromises in a conference committee, as you know, Representative Lesh. I guess I don't really understand why something that has been worked on since November cannot be vetted through with some people that can come up and be testified.
Is there anybody here from TSCA BCA have any comments on this? We will be having another meeting to follow up on some of the other language. Welcome to the committee, please state your name.
Madam Chair, my name is Frank Dolish. I'm the director of the BCA laboratory. I would just say that Senator Lesh is correct. We did confer with him.
Senator Lesh or Senator Lass?
Yeah.
There we go. I did the same thing, sorry. My apologies. We did work with him on the language as you see it in the bill. Are comfortable with that. I am aware that the commissioner, and I understand that the governor is in favor of accreditation as well. As the senator indicated, it won't mean that there won't be any mistakes made, but I think if this would have been in place 2 or 3 years ago, what happened in St. Paul would not have happened. And I think that what he is trying to propose here is to help this so it doesn't happen in the future. Because there are others out there that are talking about putting together their own laboratories, some other sheriffs of police departments, and if there isn't any control on this, you're going to have the same situation develop.
Thank you. Chair, did you hear from those individual sheriffs or individual police departments yourself, or was it, did they testify in the Senate committees that this was heard, that you heard from them on?
Chair, Representative, I don't recall if any of them did testify. I was at the hearing, but I'm not recalling. I know that the St. Paul PD was there. I believe that at least the Sheriff's Association and Chiefs Association were there. They're normally at those hearings.
Well, Madam Chair, this is exactly what I'm talking about. These kinds of questions that either we can't recall what happened in committee or maybe certain things that should have been answered. I want to know the opposition. What is their point? Are they valid points? Are there parts of this language which I've read and I know that could be tweaked based upon providing windows for them? There's so many unanswered questions. That's I guess I'll just leave it at that, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I'm not aware of any opposition.
I will ask the Sheriff's Office, the Sheriff's Association, the Police Chiefs Association, and some others, and work with Joe Gulsi, who else was at the meeting, and see if they can attend. If we ever get this follow-up meeting scheduled, we can at least hear from them. That may help alleviate some concerns. I don't know if it will fully address your concerns, but I think we can, as we continue to meet on maybe on the topic that we're going to have a little time. If that's okay. Mm-hmm. Mr. Newmaster, did you have anything else quickly?
Madam Chair, members of the conference committee, just to ask the question, where does the data go? Again, I think it's a very important thing the public has a strong interest in. Reviewing the language, it says that there shall be a report, but any other kinds of data that might be collected on these kinds of things, I think is an important element just to think of, just to make sure that all bases are covered, which sometimes a hearing would come through the process. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, members. And so I think with that, we will wrap up today. We have a few things that we'll get a list of what we need to follow up on, or there are questions and concerns, and then if they need to come in, and I will get to you all of you. Thank you for your time today.
Sure.
Yes, we're adjourned.
Can we just leave our stuff here?
Yes.
Yeah.
Recess?
We are in recess. Thank you.
I got 11 o'clock rules on the SOEs.
Policy.
Yeah. Okay, even on the policy.